session, there are a few things that were undecided, so I want to talk a little bit about what we've already confirmed and what some of the conversations that we've had since you all made those confirmations and propose some of the changes that came out of the meetings that we had. If you remember, our focus was to create equity amongst all Rouse County employees and departments, create better ease of administration, and work-life balance. So we're back to talking about holiday time. And one of the complexities of holiday time was that YVRA, the SO, and Public Works were all paying their people differently for the time that they were working on a holiday. So Ray and Kevin and Garrett, myself, Dan, and Tom got together, and we talked a little bit about how we could get alignment in that area. And their suggestion and their proposal is that we allow employees, any employee who is working, scheduled to work on a holiday or called in to work on a holiday, would get paid time and a half. Now, that's a reduction to what Road and Bridge is currently paying their people, and it's a bump for what the SO is currently paying their people.
And what about everybody else outside of those three departments?
So outside of those three departments, typically what happens is that the employee gets straight time and they float their holiday for another day. And, you know, I think it comes down to what kind of language are we using, because these people are being, you know, they don't have a choice. They are being called in. I know that a lot of times, you know, how do you differentiate someone who's working for environmental health who gets called in to go down to, you know, Art in the Park to check out the food thing, you know, from what all of these individuals are carrying out versus someone who maybe has to work extra time because they didn't get their work done during the week. And I think it comes down to the urgency of what's being carried out.
Okay.
Thank you. So that's a decision I think that we'll have to make. But most people, it's typically at the manager's discretion as well. And so we'll have to make a judgment call on how we want to move forward with that. The individuals who get time and a half also will have the ability to float their holiday. And they can choose at the time that they're working the holiday to get paid straight time for that holiday worked, or they can float that holiday to be used at another date within the defined 12-month period. So I say that because the accrual periods are different for YVRA and Public Works. They operate on a November 1st through October 31st schedule versus the rest of us are on our calendar year. If somebody decides that they want to float the holiday and they don't use it, we're proposing that they lose that holiday. It's administratively, it has been difficult to pay out the holidays at the end of the year, particularly for the SO, because they like to build it up at the end, and they like to get paid out for it. Oftentimes, you know, it helps them with Christmas money or things of that nature, but it's a busy time administratively for accounting and HR, and so that does cause a bit of a problem, and that is something that I think everyone who was in the meeting, Garrett and Ray and Kevin, they all felt that they would be okay with that.
So can they get paid out before the end of the year?
The suggestion is that they either choose to use it, they get paid out for it on the day that they work, or they decide to float it. The goal was not to have exceptions made.
Right, and I kind of agree with that. I understand all that.
And we did not discuss if they could get paid out later in the year, because how do you identify you know, what's an acceptable date and what's not an acceptable date.
Yeah.
So the answer would be no to so that question.
Yeah, they could always take it off at the last day of the year.
Yeah. I would say no then.
So the other thing that wasn't in here, your presentation and the rest, was the number of hours. Is the vacation, is the holiday 8 hours?
Yes, we came to agreement that even though the SO tend to work 12 hours or 10 or however many hours somebody work, it would be the ease of administration would be much easier if we stuck with the 72 hours that we already have allotted for everyone.
Yeah, okay.
So can I clarify, looking at 1 and 2 together?
Thank you.
Yeah, I guess. So someone who works on a holiday is paid at time and a half and they get a floating holiday?
Mm-hmm.
Both?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep, so I guess you would call it 2.5 times.
I would call it 2.5 times,
so,
yes.
You know, and historically the SO just got straight time. Airport was doing 2.5, and Road and Bridge was doing 3 times.
Okay.
So primarily the point, though, is for this is the situation for departments that are scheduled to work a holiday?
Yes.
Versus those that aren't scheduled to work holidays?
Yes, that's a good way of defining it, because all three of those departments have to have people working on the holiday. Yeah.
So if there was a like an emergency situation where, say, a different department, like let's say IT had an emergency or environmental health, this same thing would apply or no?
No.
No.
What's the proposal,
well, that's,
I guess, is
so
my question.
That's the so the mandatory time is where that comes.
We haven't discussed it yet. So we
right.
So there's no proposal for that yet?
No.
Okay.
For what again?
If someone were called in, like an emergency kind of a situation.
Well, there was a discussion about mandatory
versus emergency.
Versus emergency. You know, I'm waiting to see the definition of what mandatory is. I haven't seen it yet, so anyway.
So you would propose, I'm just trying to figure out what we're evaluating today. So that is an issue that you will continue working on and propose something, or what are you thinking?
I mean, my personal opinion is that if somebody has to work on a holiday, they should get time and a half. If it's something where they don't have to and they just want to make up work, then they shouldn't get paid.
No, they
paid for
should
that.
Have gotten it taken care of.
But if environmental health has to go out for something, then, and it's on a weekend, then I think they should. Normally, they're going to be working over 40 hours anyways, so they would get time and a half. But what we're proposing now is that holiday time not worked will no longer count towards overtime. So that means, so typically, historically, if Road and Bridge got called in on a Saturday and they took vacation day on a Monday, they came in on a Saturday, they wouldn't get the time and a half anymore. So most people who were working that extra time were getting compensated for it. And with the exception, but now if we're eliminating holiday time, then people would not get that. So that's where, on the next page, it talks about mandatory time. So
I'm still confused how you got from 1.5 time and a half to 2.5 time.
I share that confusion.
Really?
At least, I mean, I think I understand what you're saying, but I don't feel like it's written here.
It depends. I think, I always say it depends on how you look at it or slice it. So, for example, you could say, well, they get time and a half for the day that they worked, and then they get to use the holiday at another day, or they can get paid for the holiday. If they're getting paid for the holiday and they're getting time and a half, they're getting 2.5 times.
Yeah, why would we do that?
Because right now they get 3.
Some of them do.
Because that's the benefit of coming in and being called in and working on a day that you're not typically required to work.
And so currently what we have is that Road and Bridge is getting really 3 times, I mean, given that
right.
structure.
Mm-hmm.
And I Yeah. Okay. And then the sheriff's office is
straight.
So they're getting two time paid yep. twice for that holiday.
Yes.
Okay. And then the airport is doing what?
It's getting three times.
But the airport's getting two and a half.
Two.
How about communications?
Now it's two and a half.
We keep forgetting about them.
Communications.
Two.
We haven't. They're doing the same as the SO.
They were getting two, so they.
So they stick with the same policy as the sheriff's office.
Yes, straight time and then another day off.
Okay.
If I worked on a holiday, then I would get paid for the holiday, and then I would get to take it at another time. And that's exactly how the SO and communications operates right now.
And so these three departments agreed to this.
That is correct. I think from the conversations, the Route County SO, I know that they proposed additional individuals, and I think they felt like for the people that came in, they would be able to, that would be appealing to those individuals to get time and a half, and the fact that we weren't going to pay out for holiday time, which those individuals like to get, that would be a good trade-off. And if they have potentially another individual, then people may be able to have better work-life balance and actually be able to use their holidays. So there were a number of factors that were considered.
I'm struggling, or maybe you can help me understand the distinction between the employees in number one and the employee in number two.
The same employees, isn't it?
Maybe I'm looking at this too simplistically, but number one says if you are regularly scheduled to work or called into work, you will be compensated the time and a half for a holiday. Mm-hmm. I get that. Then number two says if you're required to work on a holiday, you must choose to be paid straight time or floated to be used at a second date. So what's the distinction between the employee in number two and the employees in number one?
They're the same employees, but because they're working on a holiday and we don't want to pay out holiday, we're saying when you log in your time the week that you work the holiday, you either have to make a choice. You're going to float it for another date, and then you'll be minus eight for a holiday, or plus, I'm not sure how they have it in there, but either you have the 8 hours for a holiday and use it another time, or we're going to pay you now. It's to try and, we're trying to force them to make a decision on using the holiday so that...
During the pay period.
During the pay period, or
at least somewhere close,
or before the end of the year. So
I think, Tim, your question, in answer to your question, the employee gets both. They get time and a half, and
that's how it comes.
They get
two and a half.
That's how it ends up as we're talking about two and a half.
And currently, it's that employee's choice as to whether they're going to take the pay or take the time off. So we were
well, and it's still their choice, yes. But they have to take the pay right away. They that's can't right. just cash out their holidays at the end of the year.
Correct.
Got it. Just clarify for me, this is very generous, correct?
Yes.
I have never heard of anywhere.
I think it's crazy myself.
Yeah, but. I mean,
I think we were trying to get consistency from, we got one extreme on one side and on the other side, and...
I can appreciate that, and I can appreciate that this has been done for a long time, and so taking it away from people is problematic, but I just want to clarify, this is atypical... To do it this way.
So I guess my experience always was when I was working for other people or when I ran my own business, if for some reason we had to work on Thanksgiving Day, my guys got paid time and a half.
Period.
For coming in and working on Thanksgiving.
You get time and a half or you get the day off. Those are the two choices.
Right.
That's
typical.
That's
correct.
More typical, okay. Yes.
My experience with past employers that I have, and this is, of course, it's anecdotal, is that always had, if you worked a holiday, you were paid double time, and you didn't get another day. That's just the way it was.
Just got paid double time for that.
Just got paid double
time. And, you know, I guess in fairness, there were times when I was desperate enough, I paid guys double time to come in on it.
I know you've had conversation, and we're also dealing, presumably, I have to assume the sheriff has some ability to have his own policies, and so we kind of need some agreement with him and buy-in.
He agreed.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. But I mean, I guess a question I have is, would it be simpler to just say you get double time for working on a holiday? Period. I mean, would that administratively, it seems like
period,
that would,
yes,
be simpler.
It would be way simpler. It'd be way simpler.
Than having all that. These other...
But that's still going to be a reduction for people. And so if you talk to one of the department heads, they might say, I'm not going to get anyone to come in. Nobody's going to want to work.
So, except by the way...
Except it's their regularly scheduled day to work.
For some departments.
For some, yeah.
So I guess it was maybe I misunderstood the law when I was running my business, but I could require my employees to work overtime as long as I paid it to them.
Sure.
But I mean, it wasn't like they had a choice.
Well,
I mean, they could choose not to, but they would be subject.
That's a fine line, Tim. I don't know.
I'm just being clear about the law. At least they would be subject to termination if they refused to work overtime. As long as you're willing to pay them overtime.
Well, I think you can ask people to come in and do that, but these are a lot of times this is last minute that you're asking people to come in and I think
so. I guess here's my other question: if we're going to say it's 2.5, I mean understanding that that's very generous. What is the value in creating this kind of convoluted thing? Why couldn't we just say it's 2.5?
Put it on their check each week.
I mean,
just pay them out.
If they're working on a holiday, it's 2.5 period, not all this floating and whatever. Just
that would be even simpler than, yeah, that would be simpler.
That it would
well,
be simpler.
And okay. I guess it goes back to, it depends on who you're talking to. So I will say that for this, the airport doesn't pay their people that. What they're doing is they're paying straight time, and then they're giving people comp time. So it just, I think it would just go, they're accruing even more comp
time. Like you're saying,
he could still do the same thing. He could pay them for the day and do a comp time for the day.
Yeah, he could. And
I mean, a double time, just like what Beth's saying.
I just don't know if Kevin's going to come down to, well, my people, what about work-life balance for my people? I can't speak to that. I'm trying to be an advocate for everybody who's been participating in this.
I understand. I think there's a place, though, of just like...
Pay it out.
Equity and simplicity, both.
I
understand that different people have different preferences. I mean, we have people who probably would love to work on a holiday and earn the extra money, and we have people who don't want to work on a holiday, and I think the best thing you can do is make it straightforward.
So I understand the work-life balance thing and the idea that people would like to accumulate some additional time off, but practically speaking, if I work 40 hours in 1 week and then I end up having to come in on a holiday and work an extra day, and then I'm going to get paid at least double or 2.5 times for that day, I've got the money at a future date. I can choose to take an unpaid day off of work.
Theoretically, I got the money, right? Yeah.
I mean, it's not like...
I will say we don't like to encourage people taking unpaid time off. We do have people that take unpaid time off, and it's almost like if it's for a I'm just explaining the situation, but if it's a day, it's probably not a big deal. But some people take unpaid time off for a long period of time, and then we look at it and go, well, why should you accrue benefits when you're not technically working?
Yeah, that's a great point.
And if I may, somebody can correct me if you wouldn't mind if I'm wrong here, but I think Kevin's position on why he prefers to let them accumulate the time and take it off at another point is that he's trying to save the out-of-pocket cost.
We understand that. But back to Beth's idea, why couldn't we just have everybody two times?
Sure, he'd be paying 2.5 times.
And then be able to take off one of it because they worked. Yeah.
What? I'm sorry, I didn't understand what you said at all.
He didn't want to pay overtime, so he wanted to pay, and especially the two times. Isn't that right? He'd rather have them comp it out.
Yeah, but the way the law's written, if you're not going to pay time and a half for overtime, you're going to give comp time.
We're talking about
it has to be received within the pay period.
We're talking about holiday time here, though.
Is it different?
Comp time gets paid out at the end of the year.
help. So the most simplistic thing is if I have an employee that works extra time, and if payroll's on a weekly period, mm-hmm. if I have an employee that works 48 hours during that week, then I owe him time and a half for that extra 8 hours.
That's correct.
And I can either choose to pay it at that time, or he could be taken as comp time in the
correct.
Future date.
Correct.
You, if you're going to, if comp time is going to be given at straight time, it has to be taken within the week within which your pay period is.
They have to actually can't work any more than 40 hours in that week.
Exactly.
Right.
Including your
so,
comp time.
We should probably kind of keep moving. I don't know. I mean, I guess in reality, here's my take. You guys can weigh in, obviously. I appreciate the work that you've done on this, trying to bring these folks together and figure this out. I guess I would say if there's an opportunity to simplify this for accounting, I would probably want to take that opportunity. But if there's not an opportunity to do that that's agreeable to these folks, then I guess there's not. I don't know how else to frame that. And I will say, I think this is it's a little bit insane how generous this policy is, but I'm not going to be the one to sit here and say we're going to not do this.
So I have a more basic question.
Okay.
I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. I appreciate the fact you're trying to get to this to some kind of conclusion.
No, if you would just keep us spinning for hours, that'd be good.
That'd be good. So I just want to make sure that I understand it. Under this new proposal, anybody that works on a holiday, whether they're scheduled to work or whether they're called in unexpectedly, whether they're required to or whether they're not, anybody that's working on a holiday will be compensated 2.5 times the value of that work for that day?
I don't think that's true.
No.
So who would not be the beneficiary of getting paid 2.5 times for working on a holiday?
I think there's discretionary situations where someone it's not required.
They're not scheduled to work that day?
And there's not an emergency situation that requires it.
So it can be managed differently. If the department head has...
So again, that's all confusing.
I would agree with you.
I mean, it goes back to Tim's question.
Right. Department heads typically are going to be managing whether someone is going to be allowed to work on a holiday or not work on a holiday. And they may say, if I say, I got a family in town, I want to work at someone else's, I don't, I have extra stuff to do, are you okay if I do it? And typically what they do is they trade out the hours. They will not allow someone to earn extra hours. And if they were going to, then so it's at the manager's discretion. I think that one of you had a good point of these typically are roles where either they're required to be open or they're required to come out due to a specific event that has to do with servicing either, I suppose IT could be called in if something happened, they could potentially be called in, but that really would be unusual circumstances.
Does there need to be language in the policy related to that? I mean, it makes sense to me intuitively. Are certain departments where you might be scheduled to work on a holiday. There are departments where there might be an emergency kind of a situation. And it's not just, I didn't get my work done, or I'd rather work on Thanksgiving instead of on Wednesday. I mean,
so I started trying to throw something at this, and I have, I don't know if you guys have this content, but
we do have it.
Okay,
yeah, we do.
So,
yeah.
Basically an employee may work on a holiday, right? Under circumstances with a department head approval, an employee may work on a holiday unless otherwise provided in a department supplemental personnel policy. Any employee who's not exempt or works and who's not regularly scheduled to work that day shall receive equal time off on a day to be scheduled with the agreement of the department head. Any non-exempt employee required to work on an official holiday will be compensated at the rate of 1.5 times the employee's compensation rate. So, we can improve on the language for that so it's a little bit stronger, but that was my first stab at saying, employees can work on it, but they need permission, they can trade it out. But unless they're required to work, unless I say, you guys absolutely have to work, then
we need more definition.
Okay.
It needs to be an emergency.
I will say in the meeting that we had, all three department heads didn't feel comfortable with...
Well, I don't feel comfortable with this. Because just because I say, I need to have this work done, so you're going to come in and work that holiday.
Yeah, if you don't have a life, what would you rather work on, a day that you get paid normal time or a day that you get paid 2.5 times?
So everybody comes
in. So it sounds like conceptually we're in agreement about that, and maybe that the language of the policy needs to be tweaked a little bit.
Okay.
Did I capture that?
Yeah, as soon as I get an answer to one more question.
Okay.
So what I'm hearing is that there's, and correct me immediately if I'm wrong, feel free to interrupt. I feel like I'm hearing that there's three different scenarios. We have people that are required to work on a holiday.
Mm-hmm.
We have people that were already scheduled to work on the holiday.
Mm-hmm.
And we may have people that get called in to work on the holiday.
That's correct.
On short notice. So for those individuals that are required to work on the holiday, this policy would pay them 1.5 plus 1 day.
Correct.
Off in the future, 2.5 times, practically speaking. Mm-hmm. Same thing for someone that's called in.
Correct.
They would get 1.5 and they'd get a day off in the future. But for that individual that was scheduled to work that day, they're just getting straight time for that day.
No, I think required and scheduled aren't two different things.
Well, it would change because, so for example, right now, Kevin's people, he wanted there to be equity. So if somebody was scheduled to work on a holiday and then he had to call another person in for snow removal, he didn't feel good about the fact that one was getting straight
time.
And
if you talk about objectives, I'm fine with that concept too.
Which
means
there is no distinction between these three groups. Everybody's the same. Anybody that works on a holiday gets paid 1.5 plus a day off in the future, except for these areas you wouldn't allow people to want to work on that holiday.
So correct. The clarification needs to be about who decides that they're working on the holiday and how that decision
is made. And that is such
a
priority that it has to be worked on.
Which means that, practically speaking, if that is managed correctly, anybody that works on a holiday is going to get paid 1.5 plus a day off.
That's
the other people aren't going to be allowed to come in and work that day. Right?
The distinction ought to be a 24/7 department and then a department that is... what you call it, mandatory, or they have an emergency call out for some weather event?
Well, really, event, period. I mean, because an IT emergency, for example, wouldn't necessarily be
weather-related. It's an essential service that needs to be made.
I mean, and maybe that's a word, that's a way of phrasing it, an essential
service. So I don't think we need, do we need to go there with the 24/7 stuff? I think we're already heading in the right way.
I think we understand what we're talking about, and we just want to... And
you want better clarification.
We don't want the abuse
language.
Of the situation.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. We want the policy to make it clear that it should.
And again,
be
I hope we have equity and keep it simple.
And that would be to just have a policy. If you are not required or scheduled or called in, you're not working on a holiday, right?
And we're not paying you for that.
You can work.
You can work all you want.
Well, as long as you're well. And this only applies to non-exempt employees right?
Correct.
Yes. Right?
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
We don't have
sometimes. So I think, just to circle back to the point about the 2.5 times and the way, so I think, will you guys just let me know if you disagree with me? So we're talking about number one and number two here and the combination of those. If this is what we have to do, then I guess this is what we do.
But you prefer the 2.5.
I think that if it can be simplified from an administrative standpoint and we can kind of get people to say, yeah, that's okay, that would be better.
Okay.
It'd be better for the accounting department. It'd be easier for everyone.
Just pay out.
And maybe there's a point of just saying we need to recognize that this is very generous given
I would totally agree with what Commissioner Melton is saying, is that 2.5 times pay for working on a holiday is generous. I don't think that we need to sweeten the pot much further by letting people then play with all these different options to figure out how they get to use it and when they want to use it. You're getting paid 2.5 times.
And
it never
that the department that has some concern about that is the airport.
I don't know that for sure, but I would say potentially Yes.
And then would we still allow Kevin to write a supplemental policy?
Well, I think what you're hearing us say is we want
not
consistency,
right now,
and correct. That's what we would like to see. And if we need to convey that to Kevin, we'd be happy to do that.
Kevin's got his, I mean, Kevin and I haven't seen eye to eye on all of this, but, and I don't want to speak for him, but I think Tom and Kat are exactly right. Kevin does not have an overtime budget for this kind of stuff. And so the policy that he had rewritten last year, I think before you got here, right? I don't know when it was.
I remember it.
Anyway, so what he prefers is that, is because he has this long stretch when he has less to pay. And so people build this pretty big bank of comp time. And he said that when he interviews, he lets people know that this job ends up being not a lot of overtime pay, but a lot of paid time off. And so I think when his people work a holiday, even if it's 10, he pays them for 8, and then everything else is banked out of his comp time later. And so in his downtime is when his people will take long stretches off. And I think it's fair to point out that we keep saying Road and Bridge is the only people that got paid the triple time. Road and Bridge is about the only, well, the airport had the same thing before, but Road and Bridge is maybe one of the fewer departments that has an overtime budget to handle that. But every department was eligible for the 2 times plus the holiday pay. It's just that most departments didn't have an overtime budget, so they paid them. The other option is that you get paid straight time and then a day off later. The modification that we're talking about right now is taking from straight time to time and a half, and then you either can elect to take the holiday pay right then, or you float the day off later. So
we understand it. Thank you. So I think that in theory, mm-hmm. Kevin's employees could still choose.
Correct.
Yeah, I don't see why we're talking about the accounting to come up with the numbers.
Right.
I mean, how they still couldn't comp it out.
Yeah, they could still use it as comp time.
The important.
I don't think he wants those people to do the comp time. It's not that there's
right. No, I understand that.
Because you were saying that there is choice, but in Kevin's policy, there is no choice. You're taking.
Well, in what's being proposed, though, I think
there's still
what
choice.
I see here is a choice.
Right. Yeah.
And
yes.
I understand
that's
what you're
correct.
Saying, but that's not what
that's
he does
correct.
Right now. So I think, I mean,
I understand.
I think we all get it. And it's, you know, if there's a way to simplify this, let's do it. If that's not possible, then I think.
But the one thing that we finally arrived at is that the commissioners are agreeing, practically speaking, anybody that works on a holiday is going to get paid 2.5 times.
Right? Yeah.
I agree with Beth. The simplest way to administer or whatever that is the question that's still open.
Okay.
So this for clarification, you earn comp time or overtime from a holiday, but you're going to have, well, the comp time, you're still by legally mandated to pay those people. You can't just sit later.
Well, comp time is only for hours worked over 40.
How does this, okay, but could it be that this is substance over form still comp time? In any event,
nope.
The gray area.
We pay out holiday, though.
But if we're going to pay out the holiday, at 2.5 time, there's not an issue.
Well, it goes back to the issue of whether or not, when did these dates occur during the week? Okay, like if they were, you know, when did the holiday...
Well, I'm not saying that a holiday counts toward overtime.
Can you clarify your question, Dan? I'm not sure what you're asking.
You need to clarify what you're saying. You're saying that at the airport, they're comping it out.
We shouldn't
comp
use that
time has a legal obligation to be paid out. Now, if you're accruing holiday and you're changing the policy to be use it or lose it, and you're not going to pay it out at the end of the year, you need to put that in black and white, because somebody's going to say, I accrued my holiday.
We can't call
you
it comp time.
You have to pay.
It's a different thing.
So you use the word comping it out.
We can't say that.
So we need, okay, got it.
We cannot
so we
say comping
clarify the word.
we need the policy to use the right language.
Okay.
And I think we need to go through examples so that we can make sure we know what we're talking about here.
I gotcha. I think we do know what we're talking about, and I think what you're saying is that the language in the policy needs to match our legal obligations. And we are not adopting a policy right now, so I think that
we'll have the terms coming.
We'll make sure that when that's adopted, that it's it has the correct implications.
Has Ward seen what Mount State's Employee Council has?
So I'm gonna just let Kathy give us the recommendations that have been worked on. Okay. Because we have a couple of other things here we got to keep going on.
Yeah, that's kind of going back in time.
Thank you. Okay. So the next tricky part of this is that currently we don't allow sick time. Someone who uses sick time, we don't allow those hours to be used towards the accrual of overtime. We also
Send it again.
We do not allow, so for example, if you have sick time, you're sick on Monday, and you get to Friday, so that's 40 hours, and then you have to, you have to work on Saturday, and you work 8 hours, then your sick time would go to zero, and you would get your 40 hours from the days that you actually worked.
So you don't get paid overtime for that Saturday.
You get paid over. Yeah, that's correct.
Right.
Because
not get paid overtime.
That's correct.
Because you hadn't actually worked more than 40 hours.
Correct. And we do that with sick, and we do that with vacation. We don't do that with holiday. So.
And you're proposing we do.
I'm not sure I'm proposing we do because there's a certain complexity to this. Because there are individuals, so part of our conversation came out as if somebody takes the holiday and then they have to work on a Saturday, let's say their normal work week is Monday through Friday, and then they have to work on a Saturday, they're coming in on a Saturday, and they're not getting the time and a half. So they feel like, I made this extra effort to come in on a Saturday when I don't normally work, and I'm getting robbed of getting that time and a half. So.
But we already paid them 2.5 times.
No, this is. No.
A holiday.
No, they took the holiday. They were home meeting.
They took the day off.
So they're home during that time, and then they go through Friday. They got their 40 hours in, but then they get called in to work on a Saturday, and they don't get time and a half because what'll happen is right now they would get time and a half, but the proposal is to take that away, so holiday time cannot be used for the accrual of overtime.
So
it's not time work.
Can you explain why
to get to them?
Why that would happen?
Why we'd remove it?
No, why that scenario would happen. Like, I had Christmas off, and then I had to come in on Saturday.
Well, a tree falls in the middle of
the
road,
would happen
and
quite
someone
a bit
from
out there.
We have winter weather.
Do we not pay? I mean, don't we pay people for being on call?
Yes.
Okay.
We pay them $6 an hour, I believe.
Not all the departments.
It's $3 an hour. Somebody said it's
$6. But if they come in at 6.
I don't really care how much it is.
On-call policy is $3 an hour. If it's not a holiday, if you're on call on a holiday, it's $6 an hour.
Okay. So they don't get paid any additional monies for coming in.
Oh, yeah.
They get the regular time.
Hours worked.
They get the hours worked for coming in.
Okay. So they get paid an hourly rate for being on-call, and then they also get paid for the hours that they work.
Right.
Correct?
Correct.
That's what they're saying.
And if the hours they come in are in excess of 40 hours for that week, then they also are getting overtime pay for that time.
Correct.
I don't know why holiday hours would count toward your...
Okay.
I don't know why we would treat holiday hours any different than sick time
vacation.
Hours. I mean, they should all be the same, whatever it is. I mean, I get the complaint of being called in on Saturday.
But that's not, I mean, I guess what I was trying to get at is it's not the holiday that made it so they had to work on Saturday, right? We're talking about a scenario where they're being called in.
Right.
No, but the way, so, my understanding is that there's some individuals where if they're typically on call, they are
they make sure that they're not taking a vacation day or a sick day or anything during that week, so that when they do come in on that Saturday, if they're called in, they get that time and a half.
There you go. They've self-regulated.
Anyhow, the recommendation was...
Well, if they work on the holiday and they get called in, then they're going to really be able to buy Christmas presents that year.
If they, it doesn't matter if it's holiday or sick or vacation. That's so the conversation was to no longer have holiday time not worked count towards the accrual of overtime,
which would be similar to the way we treat sick time currently.
And holiday, vacation. And vacation time. That's correct.
I'm okay with that.
Well, that's if you get the time and a half for being called in.
Hold on.
Okay.
We're going to the next page. And so that's the issue, is that if you're not getting time and a half on that Saturday that you're coming in, there are some department heads who have issues. So that's where in the next page the mandatory time came in. If you have to come in when it's...
Even if you're on call.
That's what they're saying, yeah.
Well, then...
Because people will say, I'm not going to... There's a concern that we won't get people to come in if they're not going to be compensated at a higher rate.
And that's the difference. You're relating us to the holiday not counting toward overtime.
No, this is just in general,
This feels like this sentence...
This whole
mandatory time just rendered moot the entire conversation we just had a minute ago.
I agree.
That's exactly right. And that's what payroll would say. That's what accounting would say, too.
That's
so
what I'm
now,
saying too.
Not only do we have to have, now there's, if someone has sick, vacation, or holiday, we have to scrutinize all the timesheets to make sure, were they taking the time, or were they coming in, was it really required, or were they, so that they can determine whether or not someone would have to be compensated at 1.5 times.
So this simplifies all that.
This complicates it.
So this is saying that anytime someone is called in to work when they are not scheduled, that they will get time and a half?
Yep.
Even if they're being paid the $3 an hour to be on call?
Yep.
So let's back up to the conversation we had before. We just went through all these backflips to determine when all the reasons that we wouldn't pay somebody time and a half if we called them in on a Saturday. And then we have this set that says, no, we're just going to pay a time and a half no matter what.
Well, they talked about
it. Am I oversimplifying?
No, you deny this one.
Thanks, Tom.
This would be, I will say, based on the amount of time that accounting has to spend trying to differentiate, if an employee worked, whether it was required, all that, this would complicate things significantly.
I don't see it that. I guess I see it exactly the opposite. There's no confusion for accounting if somebody works, if somebody's called in to work on a special day, they're getting paid time and a half.
This has nothing to do with holidays. This is anytime somebody is called into work when they were not scheduled.
Even if they...
I think the complexity is that they, is the employee clear that they weren't required to come in? And so what are they entering on their timesheets? And not all department heads really scrutinize the timesheets. So
that's a problem. The department heads need to start a truth.
Well, it falls into the lap of accounting. So not only now is there, if you work on, if you're sick or you are on a holiday or if you are taking a vacation day, if you're called in, you can get 1.5 times. Now,
but you already get 1.5 times if it's in excess of your regular 40 hours.
Right. And so the problem is people who when the sick vacation and holiday isn't be calculated as overtime and they have to come in on a Saturday or for an event where it's going to be part of 40 hours and it's not going to calculate as overtime, that's a problem.
That means they don't have to take away their sick time.
No, I understand.
Like a resolution for this.
No, I understand.
We'll never, Kathy's never going to know.
I am.
You're going to agree. You're going to read the time card.
There's no way to resist it.
So,
yeah, it's up to the department head to say whether he ate or not for this.
You guys, I'm going to ask. I'm going to ask you all to.
No, this is all getting.
Hold on,
pretty
a second,
goddamn crazy.
Because I feel like there's interruptions to Kathy trying to talk to us. So I understand that you guys have comments, but it's really.
I was invited here.
Can you, Dan? I'm just asking you to please wait and not interrupt Kathy while she's trying to present to us. I would love to hear what you have to say, but can you please wait? Thank you. Yes, Doug. Okay. I don't know. This doesn't make sense to me to do this.
It doesn't make sense to me at all either.
Eliminating this simplifies things, I'm all for eliminating it.
So I don't know. How do you get mandatory anyhow? I mean,
because
if somebody's got a CDL and they're already drunk, the hell?
We bounced around, you know, if they have to come in for an emergency, they should be compensated for time and a half. Well, how do you define emergency? So if it's mandatory that they have to come in, if their department says you absolutely have to come in for this, then, you know, they get paid time and a half.
The mandatory needs to be defined, and that you get back to emergency then. So
we've discussed holiday. It sounds like we're not particularly interested in supporting this concept of time and a half if it's less than. I don't know what else we need to talk about.
Yeah, I'm not in favor of this thing right here.
Okay.
Again, I don't know. And again, I think our department heads have the opportunity to know what the heck's, you know, why it can't wait till the following week as well, too.
So. Well, I think where, you know, the SO is concerned, road and bridge, and... the airport, that's where we typically can't wait. Those were the three that were in the conversation.
So. I understand. And I hear you saying that there's some folks who are concerned that they're not going to be able to get people to come in if they don't have this option. And I guess if that is starting to happen, then we need to revisit it. But as far as I'm concerned, I mean, if you're on call and you're coming in and you're already getting paid to be on call, this is pretty excessive. And if we have people who aren't willing to do that, I would really question that.
Okay.
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 What else?
Personal time. Okay. We've approved that the policy will be updated to include 24 hours of personal leave annually. They will not be eligible to be rolled over year to year or paid out. And if an employee does not use it, they will forfeit those accrued hours.
And that's what we already talked about.
Correct. One of the things we didn't propose was that because YVRA and Public Works have a November 1st to October 31st accrual, that means that personal days, we would switch personal days, holiday time, sick, and vacation, they would all fall under that accrual because not all of them are under that right now. But we would add a policy that would change all those dates.
That sounds easy enough.
Yeah.
Okay.
Is that a problem for accounting to do it that way?
I think one of the questions is that, you know, like we have the once we get to the part where we talk about the when we start the approval period, as far as like the 6 months or if we start at the beginning of the year
with the vacation time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, is that going to go back for anybody who's less than 6 months?
Okay, so we'll go. I know that's on here next. So thanks for that question, Dan, because we'll need to figure that out. But you already have these two different accrual periods, right?
It doesn't
create an additional problem.
I talked to Lori this morning and Gina this morning, and I think we're fine on that because vacation comp is already scheduled that way, and you have to have the personal days and the sick time to probably be on the same schedule. So that was what we decided, that we would put all of them on that accrual period.
Right, Gina?
Okay.
So that's fine.
So you're asking whether we want to
front load some of the
We're not there.
We're not front loading yet. We're just making sure everyone they can be on a fiscal year versus the calendar year.
Okay, but that was what Dan was asking about, was what happens, who get when, what date, what method are you going to be when you get hired? Is that correct? That's what you're hitting.
No, I think his question is in relation to this last slide, which we haven't gotten to yet.
Okay.
We're still.
We'll get there.
Yeah.
Got one
okay.
more.
I want to talk about the sick time because I know that we've had conversations about should there be a cap on sick time, and I got the impression that people felt that you all felt that it was appropriate to have a cap on that. I think that based on conversations I've had, I will be honest, I don't know if there's consensus on that, but the 1040 hours, 1040 hours seems to come up as being appropriate based on the fact that it exceeds the 720-hour cap. So if people have more than 720, they would potentially contribute or donate their sick time until we get an LTD or some kind of better program. I can't recall what the number is of the number of people that are above that, but there's not a significant number of people that are above the 1,040 hours. If, you know, some people feel there's no reason to cap it, and it has little impact, so I could go either way on this particular one.
So what's the current cap?
None.
There is no cap.
So here's what I would say. Philosophically, it makes sense to me that we would cap sick time. I'm looking at this other list of stuff, thinking about which of our departments are going to be annoyed, and I don't really care that much. And if it's going to ease some unrest that's going to be created by these other changes, I say just leave it like it is for now. That's my opinion.
So that's not my opinion. I don't like the word freeze either, by the way. So I think you quit accruing. You don't discontinue accruing or something.
Okay.
Freezing. Well, I don't like the word freezing. And we don't need to accrue when somebody's already continued sick hours when they're already over 1,040.
So that would be capping it.
Yeah, it's capping it.
But I will agree with Beth that there is going to be a lot of emotion tied to this, whether or not they're impacted. They're going to look at it as you took something away from me, and that person who's saying you took something away from me, even if they never in a million years were going to be able to use it, they're going to look at it as you took
something. Because the payout is capped.
The payout is already capped.
Way below this.
Right. I understand that. What is it capped at?
720 or something.
720?
You get paid out half of that.
Half. 720. So we're going to discontinue accruing what might not be eligible.
That's what she's asking us, is if we want to do that.
I hear what you're saying about how this may be emotional for some people in terms of quote unquote taking something away, but it doesn't. I understand that emotion may exist, but I don't think it squares with objective reality.
Well, I will say.
So I'm with Doug.
I mean, I haven't checked all the numbers, but I will say, if you think of, you know, who are some of the long timers that have been with us, and I think that there's probably a significant number in Road and Bridge, and currently we're going to 1.5 times or 2.5 times for them, and
from three, which is what
they've
been doing.
And if they can't use the holiday to accrue, that's something that they liked to use the holiday to accrue time and a half. So adding this on would be
But effectively, for that Road and Bridge employee that may have 1,400, 1,500 hours, I mean, the only possible benefit of those additional hours would be to donate to someone else.
Correct.
And we're not taking
hours. Or if they needed it, you know.
I think the objective reality is exactly what you're saying. I think the point that I would make, and that I think Kathy is agreeing with me on, is that the emotional impact of how it feels is that we're going to have Road and Bridge employees where we're taking away their ability to accrue based on holiday time. We're also telling them that they don't get their 3 times for holiday, it's 2.5 now, and that it's going to be some of those same people who are going to be impacted by this cap, and that's not going to feel good to them. I think in the end, the financial hit to the county or whatever else is minimal, probably based on people's ability to actually use these days, and so it's kind of a feel-good thing, in my opinion.
I guess
to just sort of leave it as it is.
The flip side of the objective reality is it doesn't represent that much of a risk to us.
That would be, that's what I think.
I mean, you could do it at a later time, but I'm just thinking, you know, maybe it's best to just leave it the way it is for now. Until we get, you know, an LTD in place or something.
A what?
A long-term disability plan.
Something that would replace people's need for all those sick hours.
Okay, I've changed my mind. I'm okay with it.
I'm still good with the capping. Okay, move on.
Do we have we don't have a decision then.
Well,
we
have
2-1. We've got a 2-1.
All right.
2-1 to leave it the way it is.
These are not easy things.
I was persuaded by Commissioner Melvin's eloquence presenting them.
My kind, soft girl heart.
I saw that come out.
Okay, vacation time. So we, you all approved that a newly hired employee who is in a probationary period would no longer have to wait until the end of their probationary period to utilize the time that they are accruing, the sick leave or the vacation leave that they're accruing. So that would go into effect November 1st for Public Works and YVRA. And then it would go into effect January 1st for the rest of the county. And I will say there are people who are in that probationary period right now, and my recommendation would be that anyone who is in that November 1st accrual or January 1st accrual, their hold on the vacation time is removed when that policy goes into place versus keeping that or holding that vacation until they actually meet their six-month period.
So can I clarify what you're talking about? You're talking about people who were hired in the six months prior to November 1,
yeah,
that it would just be released.
Yes.
And in the 6 months prior to January 1, that the vacation time would just be released.
Yes, rather than, you know, new people coming in and being able to use theirs right away. And I did talk to Lori and Gina this morning, and they've indicated that there shouldn't be a problem in us implementing that for all those people that fall into that category.
Because it's already accruing in the system, right? It's just...
It is a manual process.
Okay.
But I did get the impression that
okay
with that.
We'll just run a report that shows new hires for how many payrolls they will be.
It's just not a big deal.
Yeah, it's just...
I'm fine with that. Just so we're not given more vacation days. It's just when they become eligible.
Okay. Yeah. I think that's
so. Writing the new policy.
It's 2:30. How great is?
Well, I didn't take any additional comments from the peanut gallery. Are there additional comments from the peanut gallery? I don't mean to insult you by calling the peanut gallery. I'm serious. Do you have anything you want to tell us, Ray? I know, I mean, we talked about the impact to your staff, so I'd appreciate to hear.
From a road bridge viewpoint, and maybe Doug was here, I actually probably wasn't here. There's some history about the holiday number being used to calculate overtime. So if we were looking at all these things here, and so I'm fine, and the foreman I've spoken with, they're fine with the going down to the time and a half for when you work, and then even if you can't float, but I think the airport wants to float the holidays, so having that choice to float or not float, so either taking 2.5 times pay for time and a half and then getting another day off. They're fine with that. There is a history that at one time the road bridge came into front of the commissioners to get the holiday added back in for the calculation of holiday not work for the calculation of overtime. So if we could leave that in, and then I don't think there'll be a problem. It's a few people, and I don't know about the rest of the departments. Capping sick leave, I don't think would be an issue either. And then, you know, not accruing until you get down below 1040, I don't think that would be an issue. issue. I mean, nobody's going to quit over this, okay? Trust me. But there is an emotional thing. But I think the fact that a lot of the guys are still in Roden Bridge, came before the commissioners. Was it during your time, Doug?
Yeah, I remember.
So at one time, vacation, sick, and holiday, taking vacation and sick and taking a holiday, it did figure in for the calculation of overtime. They took it all away, and then I think Roden Bridge came back in, argued, well, the holiday, we don't really decide. We decide vacation, we decide when we're sick, time. and for the holiday, it's county designated, so why not let us take the holiday, and then if we have to plow snow on Saturday, why can't those hours count toward the calculation of overtime? So I think if we keep that in, cap sick leave, and go to the time and a half with the option to float or not float the holiday, I think that we have.
So you have the impression that you have some of your employees that were involved in advocating for that change,
yes. Yeah,
that would be concerned about changing it back.
So I mean, that. We'll live with whatever, and nobody's going to quit over it, you know. And I do understand, you know, why we might want to as a county cap holidays, but I think if you look at who's got over 1040, there's not a whole lot of employees that have over 1040 sick hours built up. There's
some.
Yeah. There's, I can think of two within Roden Bridge.
I can't recall. I had it on another slide, actually.
But it's a small number, is what you're saying. Yeah, I understand that.
Yeah, I know Donnie Colder, I know Troy Portberg. They're in the 1300 range, which ought to be a badge of honor to work on. So I think if we take away that holiday, county tour overtime is an issue. Why is it nobody's going to quit over it? And they'll still come.
Thanks. Thanks, Ray.
I guess the comment I would make would be interesting a year from now. We can quantify the number of times that's actually an issue in your department.
Yeah, in the coming year. And I really wish I had that information. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't have time to present it here. But we as management sometimes, when we're talking about doing something, we kind of view it as, what if everybody in the county does? It's going to cost us a bazillion dollars, and the reality is, it's a few handfuls of time and people.
I think on the other side, I mean, the place you create equity is in the policy, right? Not in the implementation of the policy.
Or the interpretation.
Or the interpretation of it. I mean, that's sort of theoretically. Dan, did you have other comments you wanted to make?
I just didn't know if the board seemed like what the state's employee council had seen.
Well, it sounds like from Kathy that's been reviewed by the committee that's been working on this. So I'm not concerned about that. And you guys did bring in last time. Please don't smirk at me. You guys did bring in last time some comparisons that we looked at.
We've looked at a lot of different data and a lot. And I think my comment to everyone was, at one point, are we going to let the data drive us, or are we going to let what's best for the county and what we can afford, you know, be the decision? Because it's almost like sometimes I feel like without there's enough data, you can look and find data to support one thing or find data to support another thing, and at some point you just have to make a decision as far as how you want to move forward. And so, I think based on the feedback that we've gotten and what we've proposed, that's what we have in front of us.
I think that you've put a lot of work into this with a lot of other people, and I would really hesitate to have us look at data and then say, oh, we're going to throw out all the work that you've done and do something different. So thank you, Dan, for that. And I understand that there's that.
Can I state what the data says?
I think we're going to keep moving here. And I understand that you think there's something in the data that we should be considering outside of this, but I want to be respectful of the process that Kathy's gone through in doing this work. What else? Okay, so do we need to recap here? Do we have a...
the only thing that we haven't said... I mean, we haven't said that we're going to allow the holiday time to go in to be calculated as part of the overtime.
We said and that we would not.
We would right? not, and then yes. we weren't going to recognize mandatory time.
Correct.
And by the way, road crews be fine. Take the mandatory
thing away. And hopefully that would be up to you guys, the managers, to schedule them in.
They could be
schedule them out the next week or whatever.
We appreciate your support, Ray, and for bringing the opinion and the perspective of your employees forward, and then also supporting us in implementing what we see to be the most equitable policy. So thank you. So do you have everything you need in
yes.
terms of direction then?
Yes, I do.
So our next step is writing policy?
Well, yeah. I will send you all an overview, and the next step is writing policies. We need to. The thing is that because November 1st is right around the corner, we need to
2 weeks.
Yeah,
we get that part done at
yeah.
least.
Yeah, yeah. So I'll start. On
and
that.
I assume we need to formally adopt policy too,
yes.
right? Like we've given you direction on what we want in the policy, but then there needs to be actual adoption.
Well, it's just she forwarded us the policy that
the proposal.
Correct.
Well,
yeah.
those are drafts. Those need to get tweaked. That was just to give you an idea of some of the updates. I would also want to run that by others.
The time off benefits thing, is that what you're talking about?
I'm talking about, yeah, the packet of the different policies where I redline them and shared them with you.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that was kind of a first, that was a first draft.
But all of what we've just talked about will be incorporated into that.
That's correct.
Correct. We're all on, yep, same page.
Great.
Okay.
Thanks, Kathy.
Yep, thank you for your time.
Absolutely. All right. I guess we're talking about ERP.
Woohoo!
Nice, easy, and light in here. Hi.
Hey. Afternoon.
Afternoon.
Hi. Afternoon.
Welcome back.
Nice to be back.
Are you having these guys join us?
They sure can if they'd like to.
Yeah.
It's up to you.
I'm not offended.
All right. You guys want to come on up? All right.
So just a quick update, not, I guess.
And you sent us a document.
I did send you the document. Okay. I did not, maybe, did Helena bring one? A copy?
I have copies if you want.
I have it electronically.
Okay.
I don't know if these guys want copies.
Actually, I'm all right. You can go
okay
through
too.
It, too.
Sure.
I looked at it. Didn't look like a lot of rocket science, so I was on board.
Right.
I could actually understand.
It all seems like rocket science to me. But.
First thing I'd like to touch on is, you know, we did form an ERP steering committee.
Who's on that committee?
Myself, Helena, Tom and Dan. Lane.
How many Dans?
Right, how many Dans do we need?
I don't know.
Right. Lane and Kathy and Ray. So it's a fairly large committee. And a couple of our activities, one is just kind of, it's ongoing evaluation of ERP activities that are ongoing. A couple of the highlights there are the GFOA report and the next steps. The committee was all in agreement that this was an important thing to get out there. And will help define the direction of the ERP on the recommendations. And the committee was very anxious to kind of have some question and answers and recommendations from the GFOA. The next item was the PACE program. Now, this is a budget item you may have had a question about. If you remember that, this is 5 days of training and an annual utilization, or every 3 years, a utilization assessment of your software.
So, are we done with GFOA?
No, we haven't seen the recommendations.
Yeah, so I guess my question, so the committee was supportive of the GFOA?
The committee was supportive of hearing the recommendations and being able to ask some questions and get some back and forth on direction, especially in regards to the ERP. You
okay.
know, we all participated in the question and answers, and I think the majority have a chance to review the findings, but the findings didn't necessarily have recommendations.
I read the findings, and I thought it was
a list of findings.
Yeah, it was pretty broad. I mean,
right, it was documentation, and so I think some clarification on recommendations.
So, and again, I the reason why I asked, and we have a little more conversation about it, is how the implementation of it, too, because it could be a whole smorgasbord of options to in, to, and then we how we get any of them done versus for picking off some of them and getting things done.
Right, and that's kind of the information that I think we would be looking for is one, the prioritization. If there's dependencies on like first steps, even if our priority is X, you know, you need to do Y first before you can even choose X.
Should do X
okay,
before
so,
you do Y.
So we're thinking the same thing, and I'm just a little leery about it, and so I'm just.
And that's the conversation that'll happen at, on that November 4th
committee
meeting.
Right.
Yeah, and I don't know if that state has been back in flux again. I believe.
I remember this Dan mentioning that this Dan maybe is out of town November 4th, and so you guys were looking at some other. I'm sorry?
I'm not here.
Yeah, so that's what you guys were discussing.
So the recommendations come prior to that November 4th meeting?
I don't think so.
They're going to show up on November 4th physically and drop the report on that?
Well, I think it was going to be more of an interactive.
And the report will come later on.
More interactive with the users.
So
and
we're not
like
going to be seeing recommendations on November 4th.
Well, maybe we can get some recommendations out of them. You know, I mean, I really would like to see, okay, next steps.
We can pressure them.
Yeah, what... You know, in the meantime, what should we be doing, you know, now?
But at a certain point, we're going to get a very formal written set of recommendations from GFON?
I cannot answer that. That would have to be Tom and Dan.
I don't know. I don't know what we're going to get in advance.
Well,
Dan's the one.
Hence my concern, too. So.
Dan's the one that's had the conversation.
Dan Weinheimer.
Yeah.
Dan Weinheimer is
okay.
The one that's
had the conversation with GFOI.
So, anyways, I do feel that it's important to bring them back out here and get that question answered and keep this process moving.
I mean, actually, I kind of like the idea that they would come and have a meeting and do some give and take with you guys before presenting recommendations.
Right.
And
that
I think
makes
that's
good
what
sense to me.
Yes.
Okay.
And then the next thing on there is, you know, purchasing is a large portion of ERP, and much like HR, there was 100% turnover in that department when the workflows and implementation was done. And we had something similar where we brought Tyler Muniz in, and it was half training, it was half an overview of how workflows were set up. And I think we'd benefit from that greatly to have purchasing involved in that process again, just to bring them up to speed.
Tom, didn't I see in a note from you regarding where purchasing was in terms of Muniz? I thought I saw some comment you made.
Well, it was just the big discussions as far as the next module and moving forward with e-procurement and...
Yep.
So I had the impression that was on its own track and moving forward.
It
should have been.
I believe it is
January.
It is on its own track, and Helena and Julie have gone through the modules on a demo. My comfort level is I feel that we need to dive a little deeper in there, and then that we actually need to understand the workflows that we implemented and our approval process. And it doesn't have to be overly intensive, but just kind of get that foundation built on your education of the purchasing module and the way our workflows were put in there.
And that's a module that's already being implemented, right? Or not?
It's not being implemented.
It's not being implemented.
No.
Okay.
But the demo's been watched. There's interest in implementing it.
So you're talking about some additional planning and possibly looking ahead for project timeline and completion?
Right. I think there's some work to be done on digging into the system and the nuts and bolts that were set up by our previous purchasing department, and then they left. Then, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Just so we have that foundation of knowledge in-house.
What you're saying sounds practical.
And we did that with HR, and I thought it was pretty beneficial. I mean, you can speak to it, Helen, on the HR part.
So the new purchasing, what we have right now is requisitions and POs, and that process is working currently in the live. In 2019, the drive for example, between Julie and I have looked at what all is involved in additional modules, which mostly is the vendor self-service, something we don't use currently, where vendors can go in, sign themselves up, put their W-9s, I think it's W-9, right?
Yep.
W-9, they can update their information, they can submit their invoices, and if they're in the system with POs, they can associate with POs, contracts, and all that. So that's a level that we aren't there in live right now. And that's Julie likes it, she's seen it, and we've communicated with Tyler to about that implementation. That's a 4-day implementation on its own, regardless of where we're at. And we've talked about it to them, and she's really interested in moving forward with it because that's something we bought, we have, we just haven't used it just because there was other things more important.
And before we could do that, there's some training there's and support that you would want the purchasing manual
right,
to
right.
Do.
I mean, we're rewriting the purchasing manual ongoing.
Right.
I mean, this can have a big play in that and getting both our setup and our purchasing manual aligned. You know what I mean? So if you're not going to write something in that immunists can't do and vice versa, so there's some considerations
it's
there.
It's that XY thing, right?
Yeah, yes. YX, right?
Yeah, I mean, our policy and our procedures have to mirror what we want to do in the system so that there is some direction for everyone involved.
So I don't know if you finished talking about PACE. I'm sorry, I feel like we kind of, did we
gloss
over that
so,
a little bit?
So the PACE program, that's, I want to say it's $5,600 or something like that, and that's a request in the 2020 budget. I have some questions on that.
Is it in your budget?
It's
where
in
is it?
My budget, okay. Yeah, in the IT budget, under end-user training. So you'll see an increase there in end-user training. And that, when I call end-user training, that means training for everybody in the county. So our security training falls under there, and this right. would fall under there. Also.
So what is the PACE?
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah. That's
so the PACE is 5 days of training, annual training for ERP, and a
for everybody or somebody? Or?
Yeah. Well, it depends where the need is, you know what I mean? So if we're doing a purchasing implementation, then it would be the purchasing clerks and
so
and
you
side.
Could kind of determine or you somebody.
Yes.
That
based on the need, yes, right,
determine.
Right.
Yeah.
And a software utilization assessment every 3 years. And that would kind of would be a review of how we're using the system, are we using it efficiently, where can we gain efficiencies.
So who does this?
Tyler Muniz.
Muniz does
this, yeah. So I just wanted to bring that to your attention because I knew it was a budget request and I don't necessarily didn't talk about it on our budget at our budget presentation.
I don't think it really got flagged when we
reviewed
the budget.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't really. Do you guys have any? Okay.
And we also have an end users group that I think is going very well with some pretty good with good participation.
So that's just like random employees.
That's power users mostly,
okay.
People that are in there every day. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Mostly office managers or admins that are in there all the time. Accounting staff is in there.
Yeah.
And the main effort right now, we've been meeting every 2 weeks, but the main effort right now is the 2019 upgrade and the testing, and it's been going well. Meaning there's been issues, which we expect, but there's been participation from the employees in the departments on actually doing the testing.
Yeah.
I feel it's been pretty positive.
It's been good. I mean, we're finding issues, mostly configuration type of issues, the participation from the employees have been great, and without that, we can't really do anything. Because they know their processes that they go through every day. I can sit there and try to duplicate, but it's different at their level. So it's
so right now we're doing duplicate books, in essence. Okay.
Not full runs.
Not full on. We do have planned for AP. It being such a big process, we have an AP set for November 8th, where we're going to refresh our data at the end of this month, and then everyone is going to do both batch in 19 and 11 and see if the numbers mesh up. At that same time, we'll be running reports. Chris Cooper has set up some reports in cubes, and it's set to refresh, right? I think she said that today, that once we run actual processes, we'll be able to see if the data actually refreshes the way it's supposed to. And then payroll, once Lori gets back and gets set up, we'll coordinate with her to do a full payroll on both systems also. and that probably won't happen towards the end of November or maybe early December.
So are we using anything of the 2019 live then?
Not live, all in tech. I mean, it's a production site.
So all of the things that the applicant tracking and all that stuff that...
That'll be in 2019.
That'll be part of this that will be freed up and available after we go live.
Right, because the applicant tracking has to be... We have to be upgraded before that is implemented. And we already have scheduled February 11th through the 13th. They're going to be on site for training and setup for the applicant tracking. And that was a date that Kathy felt comfortable with by then, some of the processes that she goes through and year-end and all that will be done so that they can then focus on that because there will be a lot of time from them for applications, job descriptions, all that. So it'll be intense.
I just really... totally do not understand this live and test thing because
they're duplicates.
Yeah, but our people are not doing duplicate work or they are? How much extra work is it creating for people to do this, I guess? I don't really
know. Well, they're not complaining, so that's good.
Are they complaining, Dan? They're not complaining to you.
That was part of our discussion that we were going to have.
Yeah.
There will be two senses.
Well, that's what I don't understand. I mean, are they literally doing everything twice right now?
Not everything. They're picking and choosing. So when we said like a full run on the November 8th,
uh-huh.
So we will do a true, they will do a true AP run
in both. So they really are doing it.
So they really apples to apples and see that the end results are coming out.
Yeah. Tom will have to approve going. Dan has gone in already and approved in the test.
In both.
But we will have the full process where Tom approves it. Reports will be generated so that we can see that the numbers match.
But it's not like every day for 6 months they're doing everything twice, right?
No.
Okay.
No.
And like payroll, we're not going to do the employee input. We're going to do it after the employee.
Right. So got it.
And then like for accounts receivable, we're only doing like the number of people.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
And we've already encountered issues. and again, it's all configuration mostly, and working with Tyler's support.
Configuration of what?
The roles, even though we transferred roles into one and the other the same, there's a hiccup somewhere. Huh. Something's not. It doesn't flow, you know.
And so that's the point of testing. You can catch those things.
Yeah, catch that when we do go live, that, you know, there will always be issues, of course, in software, but it will be less issues.
So how frequently will we have to do updates going forward?
Well, we do updates all the time, patches. And
but I guess of this.
Of this guy? Boy, every 2 years or so, I think?
Three years. Dan thinks it's 3 years?
Yeah.
So 2019-1 right now has a lifespan of until 2022, October 2022. And so according to them, right now.
All right.
So it's an ongoing process. So it's never a done project. It's a...
Got it. I think playing obsolescence, that's how they make money.
The biggest thing is that from 11 to 19 is a big jump because they've changed so much, especially that front end. When you log in, you'll see a huge difference. Hopefully the rest won't be as much.
So we talked about the testing, other efforts. Helena can speak to what she's been doing day-to-day, but lately she's been helping HR with open enrollment. So since they had the staff turnover, she dug into that, and it's really that seems to be going well.
Yes, we ran tests.
And
in the live version, we ran tests on the live version, and that worked well. Some of us went in and enrolled and everything, and it did well. And I've already duplicated the benefits itself in live. It just needs to be updated as soon as I get the rates.
So the open enrollment, we've done that just on paper in the past? Is that what you're saying?
Last year we did it live. So we're going to do the same thing as we did. It will go out as soon as you log into to your ESS. It'll say, click here, open enrollment, and you can go in. And
And mainly Helena's assistance is because we had 100% turnover in whoever was there last year, and HR was not here this year. But they did leave good documentation.
Yeah, and there was only one thing missing, and I was able to duplicate it well.
Okay.
And then another part of the transition is she's managing help desk tickets, troubleshooting any issues, kind of running them down. She's been the liaison with Munis, including our project manager and new project manager.
So what does that include? What does that mean?
Yeah, what kind of stuff are you?
Yeah.
Tickets.
Yeah.
issues.
Vendor doesn't come up or something like that.
Yeah, something doesn't work. A lot of times is someone can't finish a particular process. They need additional going into a particular line item that they don't have access to or whatever. Chris Pullman has been the go-to person, and I've been relying on her more than a couple of times to help out, because they've a lot of times have allowed users and at a line item and object level and stuff like that. So trying to duplicate those.
So do those happen one a week?
Right at the beginning when I first took over, we were having two, three. That one first week or two, there was a two or three a day, and then once a day, once a week. It's mellowed out. It's okay. Not much. Maybe once or twice a week we might get a ticket. Mostly now my tickets are all about the live version, and that's where I spend most of my time.
On 2019.
On 2019, yeah. And it is time consuming to dealing, because you open a ticket, you wait for it to be assigned to somebody, you hope they call you back the same day, and then you have to...
Before you forgot what it was.
Yeah, and then you have to let them, work through the whole process, create the error, so it can take an hour, it can take a whole day to try and figure out one issue. I have five right now open, ready for them to come and reach out to me, and I haven't heard anything.
That's great.
And it's all related to, right now, the Pieberg and Milner sanitation.
And previously we had accounting staff kind of managing those questions.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah, it's good. Stacy and Chris.
Depends on the question.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. They were in it from the beginning, so once you start something from the beginning and you see it through, you have a different understanding. So trying to learn it and how to create those errors and try to fix it.
It's been an ongoing transition with the assistance of accounting on what's, Helena can take over, what's remained in accounting, that kind of thing. They've been together on that for sure.
Yeah, Chris has been great. Been very helpful and patient in helping out when the resolution isn't an easy one.
Okay,
and other modules. These are the other modules that were initially planned, I guess. We do, I think GFO...
It's a long list of priorities.
Well, we need to prioritize them. I don't know that they're not in... other than applicant tracking... They are not prioritized.
So this is everything that we've already purchased?
For the most part, there's probably... Dan probably has... he has the full-on list. I had, budget, inventory, management, asset management, employee expense, project grant, and that's on the finance side.
Right.
And then vendor self-service, contract management, P-cards on the purchasing side. And then human resources, of course, the applicant tracking, online applications, performance evaluation, but that's going to be part of their implementation. The other two from purchasing and finance. I know asset management, Roden Bridge has reached out to Longmont. They are actually using the module right now, and Morty has reached out to them, and I think... there was some discussion on the ERP meeting that maybe some of us would do a go-to meeting with Longmont and have them maybe show us what it's like.
I mean, I think there needs to be some prioritization and consensus, and maybe the ERP steering committee is the one to do that. because we do have other people wanting things like Ray and asset management, and not having an answer is not an answer. You know, it's not acceptable. And there may
but be at the same point in time, we don't want you guys getting overwhelmed and burdened down and not doing what's primary for
us. Yeah, no, right. But, you know, by at least determining our priority and what's within our capacity, and say, I mean, we can say no. You know what I mean? There's going to be a time where you're going to say no. But being able to say no confidently will go a long way.
A confident no. I think based on the conversation we've had, correct me if you guys have a different understanding of what we've discussed, but I think we want to be supportive of what is realistic.
Right.
In terms of you all setting a list of priorities. I mean, I think that I don't know that we have any preference for what gets implemented first, last, or whatever, but
not at
just
all.
That you have a realistic project plan around what's going to be implemented.
Right, and there's some logical plan, too.
Yeah.
I mean, where bang for our buck, what impacts the most users,
right,
that kind of thing.
And that we're not necessarily committed to implementing a package just because we paid for it.
Right. I mean, that's part of the process is you've got to be prepared to drop some of them off and drop them. You know what I mean? GFOA made a good point where if you paid for it for 5 years, you paid support without implementing it, you bought it twice without implementing it. So if you dropped it promptly, you know what I mean? You have the money saved to do it again. So
do you have some sense of that prioritization, or you're planning on using the ERP steering committee to make a priority?
And the GFOA recommendations, they are very heavily involved in ERP, especially Tyler Munis implementations, and that's where I really am hoping for that feedback and saying, you know, part of my interaction with GFOA already was, you know, that was scary was, hey, stop and go back and re-implement. You know, a little bit of thing on it. Like, so I'd like a little clarification on that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And if we disagree with them, which I'm sure we're going to have some disagreements with GFOA's recommendation, have a chance to work it out and understand each other's side. You know what I mean?
Some questions. So their recommendations are primarily going to be on the finance and purchasing side.
Yeah.
And obviously this human resources stuff is being considered somewhat separately
yes.
from the GFOA recommendations. Is that
correct.
Right?
That's correct. Okay. That's why we're moving forward with applicant tracking.
Yeah.
And feel that we can do that successfully without jeopardizing.
The impacts are somewhat separate.
Yes, and not going down the wrong path of having to do a bunch of stuff all over again.
That makes sense.
So.
And we also need to look at the workflows.
I mean, I still think there's some work to do on roles, permissions, and workflows. Like, how many roles did we have? But we just went on the started. We had...
But there was a lot. 200 and something?
Different. Rolls. Biscuits or?
Yeah.
Rolls. R-O-L-E-S, I think.
Rolls.
Tasks, you know, roles. Like you define it like in IT, we would set up a role and that each role would have a sign. Like we'd have a VCC role and you guys have a certain set of permissions. And we had way too many. And the way we assign permissions, we're doing one-offs. And giving this permission to somebody right way down the road, you know, way down deeper into the system, when in reality the rule should have been adjusted and fixed prior to given to.
Got it. Yep.
We were definitely more in quick fix mode then, and hopefully this is allowing us to become a little more proactive and plan. So.
All that sounds great.
Yep.
I don't know. Do you guys have? Questions? Exciting. Do you guys have other information?
So exciting, right?
Well, I mean, I think the reality is we want to see that there's a plan and that the plan is moving forward. And
this is a large investment, and you know, we need to put the effort in and physical resources into making it work. I mean, we've committed.
Absolutely.
Sounds good.
It all sounds good to me.
Yep. Great.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I think we are. I don't think we have anything else until 3:30. Are you sure? I worry.
So you want to look at it? The new one. I'd be happy to show it to you guys. It's just it is in the front page. Once you leave that front page, it's kind of the same. A few more buttons with a few more colors, and that's it. But that front page, you will have to customize it totally different. It's very colorful, very
data intensive kind of thing. But once you do that, that's the biggest change. Everything else, it's not that big of a change.
Well, if people call in, they have the opportunity to listen to our discussions. So we leave the
recording it to them, or we just okay.
We don't need to record them. We just need to be aware there might be somebody listening.
Oh, great. Somebody that needs life or something.
So, Kendra, are you recording this?
Yep, you're good to go.
Okay. So, we are recording.
We are recording. Great.
On a day like today, there might be some people with nothing better to do but to come. All right. So, I guess I'm the chairman pro tem since Commissioner Melton's not here. So, we are here for our 3:30 p.m. item. We're getting a presentation from the Health Partnership. Ms. Stephanie Monahan is the executive director. So you're going to present the health needs assessment to us. Is that correct?
I am.
Very good. Well, thank you.
Here we go. So we have a PowerPoint. So if anybody's listening, they won't be able to see.
Would you prefer that we just let you go all the way through and hold our questions, or are you comfortable with us interrupting and asking questions?
Please interrupt and ask questions along the way. And I brought a notebook in case you ask questions that I can't answer. I can go back and find out and get back to you.
And then, you know what, Stephanie, maybe before you...
I'm going to give an overview.
Not only an overview of the health assessment itself, but an overview of the Health Partnership's role within the community would be helpful.
Sure. I can do my best.
And you don't mind if I stand up?
I don't.
Okay, thanks.
You got an awful lot of you want.
We only have 30 minutes, Tim. Excuse me, Commissioner. So I'm Stephanie Monahan. I'm the new executive director for the Health Partnership serving Northwest Colorado. So our agency has been around for nearly 15 years doing work across five counties from Grand, Jackson, Rout, Moffitt, all the way to Rio Blanco counties. Previously, we were underneath the umbrella of the VNA and Northwest Colorado Health. And then in about 2015, prior to my arrival, there were conversations at kind of the managing level that said, oh, this agency really needs to be out on its own if it's going to kind of serve as that convener, neutral entity, if you will. And so we couldn't necessarily be embedded underneath one of the players in our healthcare delivery system. So in January of 2017, we became our own nonprofit serving the five county region. We are probably most notably known for the HealthLink services that we provide. So really thinking about supporting people living in our communities with that clinical and community linkage. So we provide care coordination services to anybody who lives here, visits here, that needs help accessing or navigating the healthcare system, as well as the kind of global health and human services system outside of just the health and human services within Department of Human Services, if that makes sense. We also do a lot of community education, community planning, with the goal of community transformation to support people living in our community to live longer, healthier, happier lives.
Nice overview.
Okay.
Thanks.
I've been the executive director since June 1st. That helps. So you probably have all heard or read or seen a previous community health needs assessment. Most of our hospitals and our FQHC, Northwest Colorado Health, are federally required to do a community health needs assessment on a fairly regular basis. Usually it's a three-year cycle.
Who's required to?
So the hospitals, as a nonprofit hospital.
So they get money for it then, probably then?
They don't get money for doing it, but the goal of the community health needs assessment as it relates to a hospital is to understand what would they be spending in taxes that they don't because they're a nonprofit, and how are they then paying attention to the needs of the community? And in theory, reinvesting those dollars into health programs and services to benefit the community.
That's interesting. And I mean, just to be clear on that, the property taxes, for instance, that they don't need to pay, there's some obligation that they invested back into the community?
And as you
I don't have the legislation in front of me, but I can get you the verbiage that talks about why people are required to do community health needs assessment.
But that's generally the concept. It's, there's taxes.
That's the theoretical concept.
Okay, great. Yeah. That's good.
And the FQHC is required to do that because they get federal funds to provide health services, and so they want to see that we're doing our best as a community to make sure that those services exist.
So are they contracting them with you to do this assessment?
They did. So there was an assessment done in 2016 where, at the time, the Yampa Valley Medical Center and Northwest Colorado Health and Memorial Regional Health came together to do a community health needs assessment. And so it was time, obviously, in 2019 to do another one. The health partnership recognized that multiple entities would be needing to do some version of a health needs assessment, and so instead of multiple agencies and organizations, hospitals and clinical providers, instead of everybody doing their own, we again kind of came together and did the next iteration. So that's what you're going to get today.
And so this is distinct from our public health improvement plan.
This is complementary to. Yeah. At the same time, Carrie was part of the do I need to say everybody's last name? Carrie Ladro was part of the planning for vetting the questions, revising the questions, and then kind of moving that work forward. We wanted them to be kind of complementary in terms of the work.
So they're assessing different things.
Their approach is different. Yeah, a little. So again, this was really designed to assist strategic planning for health improvement, and we use the term health pretty broadly here, health and wellness, however you might want to describe that, also including mental health, behavioral health. Recognizing that there's kind of a big shift formerly from looking at data to say, how are people doing? What are their immunization rates? How often do they see a primary care provider? But moving towards how are people self-reporting about their own health, because that's the needle we really want to move on. So really thinking about the consumer engagement here. We thought this community health needs assessment could be helpful in agency strategic plans, perhaps the health and human services plan for the county and those types of things.
So when you say we, who's we?
We, in this scenario, the partners who came together for this community health needs assessment, Public Health, Northwest Colorado Health, UC Health, Memorial Regional Health, Pioneer Medical Center, and Rangeley District Hospital.
So you had like a working group
committee? We did. We had a committee. It was called Our Voice that provided oversight and vetting of the questions. And then to ensure that this kind of expanded beyond just traditional health, we also engaged advocates and reps to vet some questions and tweak some questions from the 2016 assessment so that it could be beneficial for them as well.
We have anybody out there that's Joe Blow and is not part of the system?
That is a great question. And I think, no, we did not this time, but it's definitely something we would want to do in the 2021 assessment.
Again, I really advocate for that too.
Absolutely.
Yeah, because just however that happens. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. So you can see the total sample was only about 700, and we recognize that's higher than the previous assessment, but it's still not necessarily enough for us to hang our hat on everything. So I'm super grateful for the opportunity to be complimentary to the public health improvement plan. No surprise, predominantly 80% of respondents were female. That's typical in a lot of surveys. And age groups, you can see here, 18 to 40, and then 40 to 64, and then a small percentage of 65 and over. Education ranged from high school or less all the way up to graduate degrees, and then same kind of spread with employment opportunities. You can see the resident respondents predominantly were from Routt County, a smaller percentage from Moffitt, and then Rio Blanco and below, and that kind of correlates with our population size as well. I have the data broken into route county specifics that we'll get into in just a minute. We identified kind of four consumer groups who completed and responded on the survey. One was the lifestyle group. These are people that predominantly say that to improve health and community and quality of life, more attention needs to be given to community residents to do that. So that was kind of one genre that we saw. Then there was the middle income. People in this group say that more support is needed, primarily for those social factors that impact health, cost of living, housing, transportation, food, those types of things. And then the disadvantage.
Can you go back to the,
yeah.
The back.
More support from who?
Well, that's always the question to be answered.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. And then the disadvantaged group, and these were folks who are living at or below poverty level, or who we might classify typically as those, you know, with the cliff effect, where they just can't quite get over that hurdle because of policies or financial opportunities, those types of things. And then our senior adults.
Did you break out the responses to the survey by these? Okay.
In some of them. I didn't want to bore you with 100 slides, so if there are things that you're curious.
Yeah, I'd be curious to know what the response was among these four.
Yeah, and you have copies okay, of the right. assessment too. So overall, our respondents describe their overall health in these particular categories, with a large portion in the poor and fair category, which is somewhat problematic.
Yeah, I was just going to say.
Yeah, it's about 56%. And that's personal respondents. That's not just right. us saying, you're not doing these things, so we think that your health is poor. These are people reporting that their health is poor. And here's kind of how that's broken out by county. So you can see, and we'll get into the specifics for Route County, but about 65% of Route County
Jesus.
Respondents said that they describe their overall health as poor or fair.
Do you think people in poor or fair health might be more likely to respond to the survey?
You know, these are always the challenges with surveys, is figuring out how do you get an equitable representation of your community. So it's just one piece of data that we want to use to think about what we want to do to move the needle on health in our community.
But you don't believe that 65% of our population is in poor or just fair health, do you?
I think Route County in particular is an interesting county. We've got Steamboat Springs that I would say is would classify itself as fairly healthy. And then we've got outlying communities that might not answer those questions in the same way.
Okay.
So back to Tim's question too, though. I actually took the survey, and you know, when it's actually accessible at your own interest and the rest.
Yeah.
You know, and again, you wonder, what's your incentive or what's your reason why you take a survey and the rest?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Still, though, I think the way I heard you answer my question is that you think it may be possible that 65% of our population is in just poor or fair health.
I think there's a good chance of that.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. I would say half.
The half would not have surprised you at all.
Mm-mm.
Okay.
Mm-mm.
I guess it's surprising to me.
Yeah. What is your primary source of healthcare coverage? I know we're having conversations on the opportunities for health insurance in partnership with the chamber and the hospital to see if we can't move the needle on that. We have, I can tell you, across the state of Colorado, we've seen a decline in Medicaid enrollments. And so we're hoping we provide health coverage guides during open enrollment to help people get connected to insurance benefits. But we, like a lot of other resort and or mountain small towns, it's extremely difficult for our small business owners to provide group insurance plans. And so I think it's an opportunity to look at that.
So reading that, 47 self-pay, so 6.7% is uninsured. I'm just dividing 47 by 700. So that's fairly close to the state average, probably, isn't it? Okay, thanks.
So what did you say?
Well, I'm saying that the 47 self-pay would be this, another way of saying they just don't have any insurance at all, right?
No, it isn't. That means that they're buying insurance out on the market. Self-pay. Self-pay for insurance. Isn't that what that means? We got two different interpretations of what self-pay would be.
You're right. I hadn't thought of it that way.
That you're actually, just like you used to do, you're actually buying your insurance.
Well, you're either buying your own insurance or you're paying cash.
Okay. So paying cash for services.
Correct.
Right, okay.
A little bit of both.
I'm actually surprised that it's only 47 myself.
Yeah, that was my...
Yeah, I mean...
I don't think that's representative of what's actually happening here.
I would say it's higher. If you look at my ag community, 90% of them are all self-pay.
Yeah. Correct.
Somehow.
In the last 24 months, you've had to leave your home community for medical care or services. Pediatrics is the number one. And then folks with multiple medical conditions. Surgery, dental, and orthopedics. And we'll break this one down for Rouse County so you can see it. And then this one, this question you probably remember. Do you know anyone who has faced any of the following challenges? Inability to afford health insurance? 73% said yes. That feels more representative to our actual problem. Addiction to drugs and or alcohol, 64%. Inability to afford needed mental health services, 56%. I mean, I think these are probably no surprise.
Right.
But it just more reinforcing data to say we've still got work to do here. Same with housing. As we get into the different health challenges and thinking about gender equity, inability to afford health insurance is more often seen by women. It's hard to know if it's more often seen by women or more often reported by women because women are filling out the survey.
Well, especially when 80% of the people who responded to the survey are women.
I mean, yeah.
But even having said that, even if the distribution had been closer to 50-50, none of this would surprise me that it was more often seen by women.
So now let's dig into some Rouse County stuff. Focusing, the health survey really tried to focus on assets and gaps because we want to leverage what we do have. Again, 65% said poor or fair, just of the Rouse County respondents.
Which flies in the face of all of the assets that are on the left-hand side of the screen. If you looked at all of those assets on the left-hand side of the screen, you would intuitively think that you had a population where most of the people would self-identify as being in good health.
Right.
So that's counterintuitive to me still.
Yeah. And I think that's something we're trying to look at, too. It's like if we have all of these resources, what are those other contributing factors that people still don't feel healthy? And recognizing that stigma is a huge component here. People feeling like even if those services are available, do they feel comfortable asking for the help that they need or accessing the services and programs that are available?
I love that number four. Only 45% say the costs of healthcare are high. What's wrong with the other 55%?
They're lucky.
And I guess the other thing on number five, too, the 38.3 had to travel, and again, you have to wonder whether or that you chose to travel for healthcare.
The question asked if you had to, as if the services and programs aren't available or your insurance didn't cover it here. So that's a pretty significant number. It's a lot higher in some of our other communities because of what we have with UC Health, but we still have services that people have to travel outside of our community for. And that number to me is really too high.
It surprises me that there's really that many. I kind of dug on that. I mean, I went and had my shoulder surgery, my shoulder operated on a veil, but I didn't have to.
And that's different. That's elective.
So that's where I was asking too. Yeah. It's okay.
Yeah.
Again, I think that, wow, if it's 38%, because of course they don't have any money, whoever, because they're short on, don't have insurance and the rest. And so to bring in some provider to service that 38.3.
But you look back, the number one reason people left were pediatrics. Yeah. We have general pediatrics in our community, but
they're not specific.
We don't have specialists.
Yeah.
And pediatrics, I'm a dummy, so what is pediatrics again?
Preconception, kids. Preconception to 18 or 21, okay. Depending on developmental abilities.
Makes sense to me, because there was at least two times that I had to take my kids to Denver that could not be treated here.
Here's the, describe your overall health for just Routt County. You can see by gender. So again, more females, but again, more females filled out the survey. More men said that their health was good to excellent than women.
Liar.
I was like, that's kind of like asking for directions, right? I'm all good.
We got it. We're good.
Yeah.
Look at you guys. Do you have a primary health care provider? And so this is for Routt that you see regularly for common problems. And so this is a good indicator of health. Again, it probably doesn't surprise you all that 16 men said no, but 75 women said no. So that means they potentially, if something, a common healthcare problem occurs, they might be using urgent care or the emergency room, which drives up the cost of healthcare for everyone.
So it's interesting. We had out of that 747 that were self-pay, and you can easily understand why the self-pay individuals might not have a primary provider. It's hard to justify the balance of those people not having a primary care provider.
And then here's the breakdown of your healthcare coverage by our community.
80% of our community is covered, or 80% of the respondents are covered by employer-sponsored healthcare coverage. That seems high.
It's really high. I mean, I think had we just done this survey and asked small business owners or ranchers or, you know, the ag community to complete this, we would see different numbers.
And the other thing is statistically that jumps right out, we think that close to, what is it, 30% of our population is Medicaid eligible, right? Isn't that about where we're at?
Close to
30%. Well, not just eligible, but actually
enrolled
in Medicaid. So that number seems something wrong. Well, that's probably a lot of people that are on Medicaid are not the kind of people that would necessarily respond to your survey.
Correct. Inherent challenges of surveys.
Yep. That's all right. Doesn't mean...
Yeah. Our care coordinators who predominantly provide care coordination services to Medicaid patients, clients, they each connected with a handful. So we did ensure that we got that representation, but it's not equitable in terms of the numbers across our community, but it was an effort that was made. And then again, need affordable health care. No surprise here.
Well, why are you not surprised by that?
Why am I not?
Oh, I guess it's an important unmet need for these individuals.
Yeah.
Not their estimation of what would be necessary in society.
What was fascinating, though, the higher a resident's education level, the more likely they were to have insurance.
Why does that seem odd?
I just think it's more justification for how are we working on, you know, kids that graduate from high school and maybe don't go on to college. What are those other tracks so that they can continue some education level, whether it's trade or whatnot, so that they have access to these other health benefits as well. Need healthy food. 12.4% of respondents said that healthy food was an important unmet need. We go back and forth on data numbers here, but Route County has a high level of people who are eligible for SNAP but not enrolled. And so we have a couple of programs, you know, working pretty closely with Kelly and her team on that front, as well as some of our community partners.
That always seems an interesting thing, too. I mean, you know, even, I don't know, I struggle a lot with some of that numbers.
So we've got time here. She can run a little long, right?
Yeah, I'm good.
Okay, yeah, our next item. I don't think we need all of our time, so if you need an extra 10 minutes or so to get through it, that'd be fine.
I can give you an extra 5.
Okay.
Sounds good.
I have to get to my own doctor appointment.
Hey, we're all healthy here. So.
But since you guys got it, but yeah, I think, you know, I think the food and kind of those social factors that impact our health, I think stigma plays a significant role in getting people connected to what they need to thrive. I was really surprised by this one. Only 5.9% of all respondents identified reliable transportation as a high priority, which I feel like every community meeting I'm in Route County, in addition to our other counties, we talk about transportation.
So I'm not that surprised. And I think it's kind of speaks to some of my general reticence about diving into mass transit for the outlying communities, because I question whether the numbers are really there. I mean, most people that live out in the outlying parts of the county, you know, resign themselves to the fact they have to have a reliable car, you know, so it's a smaller group of people that don't.
Yeah.
Even if they didn't get dinner to provide the car, right?
Honestly, yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
Greater need was reported by younger residents for needing transportation, but not people with lower levels of education or employment. And here's our numbers for Route County leaving for healthcare needs. About 2 in 5 residents had to travel out of the area. Women and men were equally likely to have to leave their home community for health care.
So, you know what's interesting about that? The other interesting statistic would be to see what are the number of registered professional health care providers in Route County as a percentage of the population. Because I'm going to guess we have a large number of doctors.
I would think so, too.
And a large number of other healthcare providers. So why is this the case? Is that a case that the providers that we have are focusing on too narrow of a band of services? Just a question. I have no idea.
It's a great question.
Feels like we have a lot of doctors.
Yeah. I think
in a small town.
In a small town, and I think this is where the opportunity lies. You know, I don't think we have enough behavioral health providers.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, because it's really interesting. If you take the, well, not that anybody uses it anymore, but I remember not that long ago grabbing the Yellow Pages, and I was looking for a doctor.
The what?
I know, exactly. I realized. But it wasn't that long ago. It was about 5 or 6 years ago. I was looking for a podiatrist, and I was just, you know, familiar. Oh, my God. I mean, there was 20 pages in the Yellow Pages of doctors. Now, granted, some of them were listed 2 or 3 times, but nonetheless, it was like, it felt like there's like hundreds of doctors in town.
So one of the things that the health partnership is doing to kind of in line with this and to kind of move the work forward is focusing on what we call as our health link, focusing on provider access, assisting with locating healthcare providers so that if you do receive Medicaid benefits and you need to access a podiatrist, that our care coordinators can help you find one that will take Medicaid. We're working, actually next week we're having a behavioral health provider reception where we'll share some of this data.
Yeah, I saw your
flyer. You saw my flyer. And then we'll bribe them with, is this being recorded? We'll share drinks and appetizers with them, and then we'll talk about how we can get them to take Medicaid patients, even if it's just 5 a month or, you know, something like that, to make that process a little bit easier, to hopefully expand the access network. And then that provider resident support, assistance with resolution of problems and communications when a resident has a provider but is avoiding using their services. And we find that a lot with people who have multiple health needs going on, particularly behavioral health issues. They might not feel trusted and safe accessing the regular healthcare system. So our care coordinators are kind of their partner and their coach in that process. Resident engagement in healthcare, when a resident's involvement, similar to what you mentioned, how can we get more people involved in their own health and shaping what our healthcare delivery service looks like here in Rock County, the better. This is something we provide. The health partnerships receives funding from Rocky Mountain Health Plans via HCPA to support the Medicaid patients, and we've received a 20% reduction in support for 2020. So we're still in the process of figuring out, does that mean we provide less of these services in certain communities or those types of things? So we're paying attention to that. We aim to remove barriers and support residents who are dealing with complex health challenges. There's more. We do so much more. I'll let you guys read that. One of the things that, as we pulled this community health needs assessment together, we recognize that lots of entities need to engage with community, whether it's through coalitions or what have you. And so at the Yampa Valley Wellness Conference next Friday, we'll be launching the Yampa Valley Wellbeing Coalition that will really dig into the data and then figure out how we want to engage residents and people living in our community to address and come up with solutions to focus on and really help us prioritize, because we can't tackle everything all at once. And so if transportation is really an issue, then we'll kind of that community group will have the opportunity to dig in and come up with action plans around that. It'll be done in partnership with public health, so that if public health needs to engage with community, we can do that under that coalition as well. Our hospitals, as you've probably heard, have the hospital transformation program, where they're mandated to figure out how they can connect and engage with community to provide better resources and services for the Medicaid population. So we'll be...
they're mandated? I thought you used that
I'm word. Sorry. I shouldn't use that word in here.
They're encouraged.
They are encouraged with a reimbursement model to explore how they can better take... Thank you for that correction. How they can better take care of the Medicaid population. So we'll be supporting that through the Yampa Valley Wellbeing Coalition as well. So lots of ties, so that we're hopefully breaking down some silos and figuring out how large groups of people can come together to address these health disparities. Any questions?
So you've produced this report for use by everybody in the community.
Yep.
But in particular, it was at the behest of the large medical providers. So,
who are mandated to provide it?
Or encouraged.
So. Or encouraged, as the case may be.
Yeah. We weren't, but we...
No, you volunteered and we appreciate that. I understand that, too. Yeah, that's good.
But it wasn't part... It wasn't left up to you to provide a series of recommendations to these entities?
No. So we... our initial report included some recommendations, but they seemed to fall a lot on the shoulders of the health partnership. And so it felt a little awkward to present, to include a report that was supposed to be semi-neutral that included a lot of work for us. So we took those recommendations out and had our our third-party evaluator, Dr. Evans, kind of craft the report and slice and dice the data, so it was not us saying what it was.
Yeah, it seems kind of odd that you would be producing a report making recommendations to yourself.
Right? Stephanie, I think you should go on vacation. Yeah. We are sharing this kind of broadly. We'll be sharing it at the Empaveli Wellness Conference. And then we'll let the Wellbeing Coalition really dig in and figure out how are those systems working together. We recognize that, you know, as we screen for those social factors that impact health, how are we linking what people need, not only in the clinical setting, but what do they need at the kind of broader health and human services landscape? And so thinking about how do we increase our access to quality nutrition in addition to, you know, the services that human services provide as well as Lift Up. We have the opportunity, I think, to do more that meets the needs of what people in the community are telling us they need. Housing would be unknown. We are not going to step into the role that the Housing Authority is playing, but I think we have a role for advocating and working on policy change around those particular areas.
All right. Well, thank you very much. It was very informative.
Yeah, it was. That's good.
Yeah.
If there's any, as you read through the reports, if there's anything you want more detailed information on, or if you would like recommendations, we would be happy to suggest some to you all.
Well, I think we're, as you probably are aware, we're early in this stage of taking over the functioning of our public health department from Northwest Colorado Health. So we're kind of on the learning curve on a large number of things and trying to figure out how all this fits together. And this feels like a piece of that.
Absolutely, and we're super excited to have the contract to write your public health improvement plan so that it can be mutually reinforcing with this. I think that is,
and
we're seeing that as a real win-win.
Complementary and not duplicative.
Correct.
Great. Thanks, Stephanie.
Thank you.
Nice to meet you. See ya.
Nice to meet you guys, too.
Did we have anything else? I don't know.
Well, our agenda showed that we were going to have to be discussing departmental updates.
Just to guess if we had questions. I didn't really have
guess what it is. Yeah, if you have any questions.
Because we've been getting these updates from via email from our departments. I didn't have any questions at this time, unless there was something you wanted.
Well, Beth, just before she left, she came in to see me. Item that she brought up to me was about to make sure that I communicated with Ray and Dan that the part of this destination management project that's going on with the Strawberry Park Blueprint 2.0, they get the sheriff to comment on traffic impacts and stuff in Strawberry Park.
This is regarding Buffalo Pass. Or does that also include the hot springs?
It also includes the hot springs. So then, I'm just trying to look at the list here from Ray. She made a comment to me that about the remodel and where it was. Ray just didn't understand that they're supposed to go out for an RFP with the demolition. So they can go ahead.
Changed it to where?
I know, Ray. It's when I was here.
So you set him straight on that?
Yeah, I will say that. I haven't yet. And then the security assessment, just wanted to make sure that there's no cameras except for camera needs to be down by the treasurer's office and that maybe in the DHS building. No external surveillance yet. And then the salary increase. So what was that number that I can look at?
I think that Dan's plugged in 2%, has he not? Or did he just plug in the...
He put in 2%.
The
question is, are we going to stick with the 2%? Are we going to go back down to the 1.75?
Is that what you're talking about? Are you talking about the salary survey?
No, I'm talking about the salary increase.
Because the average of the two offices in at the capital is 1.75.
Yeah.
So the question is, where are we going to round it off to 2%?
Yeah.
What was the dollar amount? What's the difference in those two numbers?
That I thought we had already decided we were doing that.
I thought you did too.
That we were rounded up to 2.
Or
yeah. I thought that's where we were at. Yeah.
Yeah. It'll take the sting off from not having that mandatory day.
No, and it kind of, at least
bullshit,
partway addresses the, you know, the salary survey that you were referring to for the resort
communities. Not states,
So we're not going to
resort areas. Salary survey.
I think
salary.
I think, yeah, to me it seems pretty straightforward. We're doing better. To be able to say that we're doing better.
That would be chintzy for us to do 1.7.
I agree. It feels chintzy.
Okay,
although it's probably real money, it's probably $20,000 or $30,000.
That was a question from Kathy, so I'll communicate to her.
Yeah, I thought we.
Told yeah, her. We were pretty well.
I thought we did too, but I'll communicate to her.
Yeah.
And we want credit for that too.
Yeah. Atta boys.
Is that it?
Well, I think so.
All right.
Tomorrow.